This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Scott Seidenberg of pregame.com will join us. We will go over what was an eventful Sunday in the NFL. We'll get his thoughts on two Monday night games here, as we got two coming up here for this late. Look ahead to week four, maybe get his thoughts on some baseball as we enter the final week of baseball. So, fun time of the year, but the NFL is where we start. And boy, a crazy late slate, late in those 4 o'clock Eastern games. We had one really good game in the early window, and I mean, a couple of the games were really good. But I'll start with what would have been the lead for sure had they blown the game. The fact that Philly came back and won takes some of the heat off of it. But I was ready to come on here and say, man, by the time you listen to this, I don't know if Nick Sirianni has a job. Now the Eagles hang on. They win 15-12. They get a 3rd and 16 with about a minute and change left. Goddard goes for about 65 yards. Barkley gets in. Barkley's going to be tremendous for the Eagles. It is tremendous for the Eagles, despite the drop the other night. And Philly wins the game 15-12. They cool off New Orleans. This is a weird game, 3-0 pretty late, 7-6 late. But Sirianni did two or three of the dumbest things you'll ever see after the Monday night ridiculousness of throwing the ball with a minute 40 left in Atlanta, no timeouts. He's before the half, it's a 3-0 game. He's got 4th and 1 from the 15 with like 14 seconds left. And he goes for it. Even if you get it, you're not going to get it. You don't have enough time for a touchdown. You're going to have to kick a field goal anyway. He goes for it and he doesn't get it. And he comes away with no points. And then later in the game, like 5-6 minutes to go, he's up a point. And he trots out his kicker for a 60-yard field goal. He misses, and it sets the Saints up for a score. My goodness, it's almost like a blackjack player who's just chasing, just keeps trying to double down and try to throw more money in. He is just making bad decision after bad decision. And usually you don't get fired after 1-2. I don't think he would have gotten fired if they lost this game, but how loud these losses were and how much they were on Sirianni, he certainly would have been, I don't know, a game or so away, you'd think, from the chopping block, with just how irresponsible, how illogical these decisions were to go for it. But then again, he gets away with it. They win the game. So he at least gets a mini reprieve, I would think. But my goodness, that was some strange behavior dating back from Monday. I can't think of a coach who's had a stranger, just sort of worse week, worse 6 or 7 days with the in-game decisions. Those things make no sense. Kicking a 60-yarder. I don't care you're in the dome. I don't care all these guys make kicks. 60-yarder in a 1-point game. You can't do that. And the one before the half was probably more ridiculous because there's no upside to going for it. 4th and 1 from the plus 15. You're not going to get the touchdown. You're just very strange. But the Eagles do win. They're 2-1. Like I said, the Saints cool off. And they are 2-1, 15-12 final. As that 3rd and 16 to Goddard was the big play. The big story here, a couple of these teams being 3-0. Seahawks 3-0, but they haven't beaten anybody. And I'll get to that game and I'll hit on all these games, at least for a minute. Steelers 3-0, ugly football, another under. But they played much better than I thought. Fields in that defense gives them a nice little combo. The team that I've had a hard time believing, just because it's Sam Darnold, just because it's the Vikings, that team has a lot of talent. They killed the Texans in a game where all these games are ugly and close. That was a clinic. They dominated Stroud. They've gone through a pretty tough part of their schedule now. Now, they still got a lot. They still got to play the Lions twice. They got to play all their division games. And they have a monster game in week 4 against the Packers. But the Vikings, I'm starting to let it creep into my head that maybe I can't put them on the same level as the 49ers, and that was an awful loss for the 49ers. I can't put them on the same level as the 49ers and the Lions, but they might be on that level or just a level below. And look, if you want to make the case for them, they beat the 49ers pretty handily last week, beat them last year. They are 3-0. They beat the Texans, who a lot of people, you know, had going to the AFC Championship game, the Super Bowl. So this has been an impressive 3-0. They'll still get Addison back at some point. They'll still get TJ Hockenson back at some point. They're going to be a playoff team, I would think, as long as Darnold's healthy. That is an outstanding coaching staff with O'Connell as the head coach and Flores as the defensive coordinator. Minnesota might be a team where you look up, you know, in January and they're playing in the NFC title game. It's at least entered my thought with the NFC's, you know, not that great. Philly and Dallas have shown issues. All right, Detroit's good, but they're not great. 49ers are really good, and they'll get guys back, but are they great? The Vikings are a really good team, and they are one of the stories here, but let me get to some of these games here. Just quickly run through all of them. Game I was dead wrong on. Packers beat the Titans 30-14. I thought Willis would be bad on the road. I thought the Titans would be ready for the run. Willis is not the same player we saw 2 years ago when he played against the Chiefs and, you know, spot duty for the Titans. coincidentally, where he was just basically a running quarterback. Vrabel didn't trust him to throw. And everyone gave Vrabel so much credit for keeping that game close against the Chiefs 2 years ago on Sunday night. Well, you know what LaFleur's doing? LaFleur's going out and not keeping the games close. LaFleur's going out and winning the games with Willis, who has been outstanding. You know, in terms of the expectation, in terms of the backup, everyone thought, and me included, I'll be the first to raise my hand, that he would come out and, you know, be overmatched. He is much improved, looks a lot better than we saw him in the past. And the Packers now 2-1 going to week 4, heading into week 4 against Minnesota. The Titans 0-3. I mean, I kind of like the team. Levis is just so bad. Levis threw a pick 6 today. He's just awful. They can't protect him. They got some players on defense. They've got some receivers with Hopkins and Boyd, and, you know, Spears has got some juice, but that's a team. Their season's over at 0-3. They've let some games get away, and that's how it goes in the NFL. You let some games get away early, and it's just, you dig yourself a hole that's hard to dig out of. Giants beat the Browns. Browns with an awful loss. And my goodness, these underdogs continue to do well. When you look at the Giants as a big dog, the Broncos is a big dog. Said it the other day in regards to the Patriots, Jets, and the Jets end up winning and covering, obviously, but just a hard league to lay points in. There's so much parity. Nobody's great. And the Giants, after fumbling the opening kickoff, Browns get a touchdown, and Jones throws an interception, and the game is about to unravel, except they hit Jones in the head or the face. They call roughing the passer. Keeps the drive alive. Giants tied up, and Giants really controlled the game from that part on until like the mid-third quarter. Then the Browns, you know, had a rally. Giants ended up missing a kick to keep Cleveland in it, but the Giants hold on, and that is just an awful loss for Cleveland. That is, look, they're 1-2. Watson's an issue. They can't block. Their offensive line is hurt, so Cleveland might be in for a long year. Dable's a hell of a coach, and look, maybe he's hard to get along with. Maybe, you know, he has another 4, 5, 6 win season, and they let him go. That's usually how things go in the NFL. If you don't win more than 5 or 6 games a couple years in a row, you don't usually get that much of a leash unless you have a ton of equity built up. But boy, if Dable got let go, somebody would hire him very quickly. I think he's a good coach. He's just not a lot of talent, except for Neighbors, who a couple touchdowns, just an outstanding player. He is and I don't say this lightly, he is a Hall of Fame level talent. Him and Harrison, they are that good. And again, I know the rookies, it's overreacting. Maybe this will look stupid in 2 or 3 years, but those guys are monster players, Neighbors and Harrison. Neighbors is just an awesome, awesome wide receiver for the Giants. Bears-Colts made my eyes bleed. Every time I turned the game on, somebody was either throwing an interception or trying to throw an interception. Richardson, even though the Colts won, Richardson was atrocious in this game. Missed so many easy throws. Now, he can run. He's athletic, but my goodness, bad interceptions. That interception he threw in the end zone, one of the worst interceptions you'll ever see. Missed guys left and right. Caleb Williams had a couple picks and a couple more near picks. He at least made some throws that, if you're the Bears, you know what? You feel a little bit better about him today than you did a couple days ago, where you at least saw the glimpses of, all right, this guy's making plays. I'll live with the mistakes. He's a rookie, but at least he's making throws. He had 350-something yards passing, so they can't run the ball at all. That's at least a promising sign from the Bears, but the Bears are 1-2. Colts finally get a win. Talked about Texans-Vikings, talked about Eagles-Saints. Steelers going to this game 2-0, Chargers 2-0. Herbert with a high ankle sprain, gets banged up in the second half, can't come back. Steelers end up pulling away 20-10. They actually take a knee first and goal at the 1 with like 2 minutes left, but that saved the under here to go 20-10 final for the Steelers. Look, Steelers are going to win these ugly games. I don't know what kind of upside it gives them, but I was wrong. I thought they'd be really bad, and maybe if Wilson played, they would have been, but the defense is outstanding. Watt is tremendous. Fields gives them a little element with the legs, doesn't kill them with the turnovers, and they're going to probably find their way to win 9 or 10 games, make the playoffs, and probably going to run into a team like the Chiefs or somebody with a quarterback, whether it's Josh Allen or Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Rodgers, and they're probably not going to be able to compete, and they're going to, you know, score 9 points or 12 points and get eliminated in the first round like they've done a lot in these last few years. But a good start to the Steelers season here, 3-0 with a chance to rack up some wins. Broncos look a lot better. We had Femi Ebenefe on the other day who said, hey, Tampa, complete fraud, 2-0 team. They're not for real. Denver showed you he was right. Denver absolutely dominates this game start to finish. Knicks looked good. I've been hard on Knicks, hard on Peyton. So good for them in terms of, a good day, a good win as they win that game dominant fashion, 26-7. And Knicks shows you a little something. Tampa was lucky to beat Detroit last week. Tampa's not on the level of these other teams. Look, they won the division last year. They could, you know, flirt with a playoff spot, maybe flirt with a division because that division, who knows? But this is a flawed Tampa team in Denver with a nice day. Panthers-Raiders. Panthers win 36-22. Bryce Young benched the quarterback, number one pick overall. He's played like 18 games, 20 games. And he's played badly in all of them, and he did not play today. The day on Sunday might be the worst day of his career because as soon as Dalton gets in there, 90-yard touchdown, 36 points, He basically looks like, you know, they're the greatest show on turf. If he went in there and they scored 6 points and they stunk, you could make excuses for Young. Hey, no talent around him, no receivers, the scheme. You can make all the excuses. And Saban, Nick Saban, who coached him at Alabama, said, hey, there's just not enough talent around him. Well, it looked like there was plenty of talent today. Panthers scored 36 points, and it makes Young look absolutely worse. And all the Young apologists, look like they don't have a leg to stand on. Look, I'll even admit, I'm like, why would you play Dalton? You're not going anywhere with or without him. Just see what you got in Young. And the flip side of that is today is like, hey, playing time is a privilege. You don't get just handed playing time. You have to earn it. And Young has been so bad. It's almost like a baseball player who's like 1 for 50, where, hey, if you're 8 for 50 or 6 for 50, you know what? It's a slump. The fact that you're 1 for 50 and you're not competitive and you got 48 strikeouts or whatever, you deserve to sit on the bench and just take a little time out. That's the case certainly for Bryce Young, as this was not a day that makes you feel better that Young can have a resurgence. Now, maybe he needs to sit and get his confidence back, but that was a good win for the Panthers. And who knows, maybe with Dalton, some of these pieces around Dalton, maybe that's a team that can actually be in half decent. Again, it's one win. It's the Raiders, but that was an impressive win for Carolina. Bad loss for the Raiders to lose that game at home. Dolphins, Seahawks. Seahawks win 24-3. Seahawks 3-0. This game was an absolute bore as well. If you're Miami, I know you can't have everything. You've got expensive receivers. You paid your quarterback. You got the guys on defense. You had to have probably a better contingency plan at backup quarterback than, you know, Tim Boyle and Skylar Thompson, because Tua was healthy last year, but he has not been healthy his whole career. And their season's basically over. Tua's out a month. By the time he gets back or is cleared, at earliest, they're going to be like, I don't know, 1-6 or 2-5, or to the point where, okay, is it even worth bringing him back? So again, I know it's early, but it gets late early here. And I don't know if by the time Tua is able to come back, if he's able to come back, if there's anything worth coming back to, their season might be sunk before it even begins. And they have a tough schedule that is backloaded in the second half, a bunch of games outdoors and, you know, against good teams, a scenario where Miami struggles in the first place. So Miami might never get off the mat here in this 2024 season. Ravens, Cowboys. Ravens win 28-25. They get off the schneid. They get their first win. This game was 28-6 with like 8 minutes to go. Touchdown, onside kick, touchdown, stop, touchdown. And then it was 3rd and 6 at 28-25 because there were some missed two-point conversions in there, two of them for Dallas. Otherwise, we'd be tied. 3rd and 6 for the Ravens. Lamar completes a pass. If he doesn't, boy, I think Dallas is getting the ball back, and that kicker can make it from a country mile. And they're either going to tie it or win it or go to overtime. So that would have gotten dicey and would have been another, you know, bad loss here for Harbaugh and the Ravens. But the 3rd and 6 and then a run later for Lamar to really seal it. And Dallas loses. Baltimore gets a game they desperately need. And look, Dallas at least saved face, because if that ended 28-6, I think a lot of the conversations, boy, this has gotten stale with McCarthy and Dak, which maybe it has. Defense is awful. At least at 28-25, you can take a little bit away from, hey, we had a nice comeback. Now we're 1-2. We still have our games against the Giants and the Commanders. We'll get our 9 or 10 wins, which I still think they'll do, but not an impressive performance, although it was a good late rally for Dallas. And Baltimore gets a much needed win because they have the Bills and the Bengals next. They were looking at, boy, if you blew this and you're 0-3, I don't care how much talent you have. I don't care what you say. You're going to be in a position where it's tough to tough to make a rally with their schedule starting 0-3, but 1-2, they are now in the mix. Rams 49ers was one of the crazier games you'll ever see. This is a typical game. And this Sunday 4 o'clock window finally felt like it was the NFL for the first time, where crazy games go from wins to losses, losses to wins. They call it the witching hour. You usually get that 1 o'clock Eastern right before the 4 o'clock games, that 3:30, 3:45, all of the scores change and you get all the crazy finishes. We haven't had a ton of that this year. You finally got it, and you got it at the 4 o'clock window with these games, because the 49ers were in control throughout, up 14, up 21-7, up 14-0. Rams, no Cup, no Puka Nacua. Now, the 49ers were down some guys too, obviously, without McCaffrey, without Debo, and it looked like, hey, no Debo, no McCaffrey, no problem. But the key point of this game, after everything that happened, 49ers are up 7. They're on a drive. Looks like they're going to be able to get in field goal range and either run out the clock, kick a field goal, and end it. They kind of get in no man's land with 2:20 left, 4th and 5. Rams have one timeout, other side of the 2 minute warning, like 2:20 left. You can really do all three things and make a reasonable case: punt, kick a field goal, go for it. Shanahan, I can't kill him for it. And he's had a lot of these late game collapses in big spots too. I can't kill him for kicking the field goal. I know it's a 55 yarder, but it does end the game. You still have the touchdown safety blanket. Even if you give up the touchdown, you get the ball back. It's not as similar as the Philly one where he's kicking from 60 and he's only up 1, and a field goal puts you behind. You have a touchdown safety blanket. So again, if you punt and the ball goes into the end zone for a touchback, you gain 17 yards of field position. I don't know if that's worth it. Fourth and five. Okay, you could have gone for it, but I don't know if, you know, it's not like it's fourth and one or two or three. It's still fourth and five. Hindsight, I guess like 51-49, maybe you go for it just because you have all that, those weapons. You have a good play caller, but I can't kill him for kicking it. But he misses it. 49, Rams tie in a blank and get the ball back and kick it to win and get a field goal range to win. So a big win for the Rams. McVay's a hell of a coach. So at 0-3, they would have been looking at disaster with all their injuries, but they win that game 1-2. And now the 49ers 1-2. Now you don't worry about them long term, but hey, lost two in a row. They have a bunch of injuries. They have a tough schedule. They still have to play the Chiefs and the Lions and the Packers. And, you know, they look at the first place schedule. The Cardinals and Seahawks look a little bit better than maybe people think. So who knows if the 49ers, you know, rip off their 12, 13 wins. Maybe this is a little bit of a down year where they get to like, I don't know, 9 or 10. And they're already, look, 1-2 is not a hole or anything, but it is something to keep an eye on. Last one, Lions, Cardinals. Cardinals got screwed here. This was 13-7 Lions before the half, 2 minute warning. Wright is about to go to the 2 minute warning. Lions snap the ball, throw a pick six. Refs come on and say, hey, play's no good. We hit the 2 minute warning. If you go back and look, the play was good. The snap was good. Now you could say, hey, they whistled it dead. That's why some of the guys on the Rams stopped, maybe, or some of the guys on the Lions stopped, maybe. But that was a rough one for the Cardinals. That should have been a pick six. Cardinals had a bunch of chances to get in the back door. Lions didn't do a ton on offense in the second half. They had the cool hook and lateral for touchdown. They ran the ball pretty well. Good win for the Lions. Lions are one of the four or five best teams in the league, I would say. Defense is a little bit better. They got a million weapons on offense. You still don't quite trust Goff, but this was a good win for them coming off the bad loss against Tampa. Cardinals had their chances, but just could not quite get the win and get the cover. They even had down seven. They had third and 12. They had Detroit at third and 12 where, hey, all right, we're like 2:30 left. Third and 12, we get the ball back here. Who knows? Goff completes it, and it's kneel downs from there. So it's you know, it's a good win for Detroit here as they go to 2-1. Cardinals are a feisty team. You expect more than 13 points out of the Cardinals, especially they scored seven right off the bat. Detroit got the ball first, scored seven. Arizona answered with seven. You figured it'd be one of those games where, hey, somebody's going to win the game 34-31. It really slowed down, and it was kind of a slog after that, but a good win here for Detroit. So that is the football. We got two games on Monday night. I don't have a great feel for either. Jags, Bills. Bills laying five. That's a 7:30 Eastern start. Then Bengals, Commanders. That's an 8:15 start. I like the two Monday night games. I wish they'd spread them out a little bit more. It was during COVID when they would play like one at like 5 or 6 at night randomly. Then the other one, like as the other one was ending, and they're spread out a little bit. But hey, two games, it should be fun. If anything, I take the Jags plus the 5.5. Jags are a weird team. They play the Bills tough. Beat them last year. They're desperate at 0-2. Bill's a little fat and happy at 2-0. I could see taking the points with the Jags. I can't lay the seven. I just can't lay major points in this league. You just look at all these underdogs, how well they're doing. I have a hard time seeing Cincy actually going to 0-3, but I'm in no hurry to lay seven there. I do think Washington's so bad on defense. Cincy could, you know, probably find a way to win. If you can tease ahead to next week or something, I'm sure a lot of people, what they're going to do is moneyline parlay Bills and Bengals. Okay, but, I mean, you see how that goes with all these upsets. I mean, the 49ers losing today, the Raiders losing today, the Bucks losing today, the Browns, all the 6 and 7 point favorites all lost. So these moneyline parlays can be very dangerous in the NFL, so I would advise against that. I do think the Bengals win. I think Jags Bills close, so I'll take the Jags plus 5.5. Nothing, I'm dying to bet. We'll see what Scott Seidenberg's like in those games. We'll get his thoughts on the Monday night games, the MLB pennant races, and plenty of Week 3 and Week 4 NFL. That is next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him at pregame.com and VEASAN live now. VEASAN, he's back on the weekends. His former home, he has returned. It is the great Scott Seidenberg joins the show once again. Scott, what's up, man? It's week 3. Was starting to feel like, man, we're not getting these crazy finishes. That Sunday witching hour hasn't been the same. And today it was okay, but then the 4 o'clock games Eastern, the later ones gave us some excitement. So what's your biggest takeaway from today's action so far?
The big dogs are eating, Will. Yeah, you know, it's what we're seeing. The dogs of 6 or more are not just covering, they're winning outright. And we saw the Rams get a win over the 49ers in the late window. You know, the Panthers beating the Raiders, and then earlier with the Broncos. And then you had the Giants beating the Browns. Like, this is the year of the dog. And sometimes I kick myself because Why overcomplicate things when we're trying to handicap these games? It's as simple as just look at the large spreads and take the points.
Yep. I didn't have a good feel for Jets Patriots. And my whole thing was, look, I just can't lay points in this league. And I somehow ended up on enough of these big dogs where, you know, I just either not played the game or whatever, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's a very hard league to lay points in. Let's get into some specific things. Boy, can you imagine if Philly would have lost the game with Sirianni not taking the points before the half, trying the 60-yard field goal? I feel like he would be on the hot seat, coupled with everything that happened Monday night. What were your thoughts on the Eagles game?
I think he still is on the hot seat. It's absolutely embarrassing, the decisions that he's making. And I think it's a little bit more than Nick Sirianni. I think it's a combo of Nick Sirianni and Kellen Moore, because the play calling is absolutely atrocious. They chose twice, Will, to not do a tush push and instead try to do some sort of variation off of it. And both times they were unsuccessful. Then Sirianni's decision, as you mentioned, to forego chip shot field goals and then finally make a decision to kick a 60-yarder just made absolutely no sense. I think it's a combo of the bad decisions, and now maybe it's starting to creep into the back of his head, and also the play calling, because Jalen Hurts has not been put in good situations. I'm not liking what I see from this Philly offense. Maybe they have to simplify things. Like I said, simplify our handicaps. Maybe they have to simplify it, because the best thing going on with Philly right now is Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and it's just, he's almost like, Sirianni's almost like a bettor who just keeps doubling down and trying to chase where, all right, I made one bad decision. Let me just do something crazier to try to get that back. Like the 4th-and-1 before the half, and I'm all for, hey, 4th-and-1, go for it. You're not going to have time to, even if you get it, you're not going to have time to get a touchdown. You have to settle for the field goal anyway. To
me, that made no sense, but you're right.
No reward.
If they do get it, there's 10 seconds left. So you have one play to the end zone?
From 15 or something. Yeah. It's so ridiculous. And I don't know what was more ridiculous, the 4th-and-1, you know, from the 60, where if you miss, the other team is all of a sudden in field goal range. Just very, very odd. But yeah, hey, they're 2-1. It's still a pretty good team. And when you look at Hurts with Barkley, they're going to get A.J. Brown back at some point. Devontae Smith, I know, got hurt today. But when they're healthy, that trio, that quartet of Barkley, the two receivers, Smith and Brown, and then you throw in Goddard, that's a pretty good offensive team for, you know, a league where it's just hard to score points. I still think they'll get their wins. But, man, they are strangely, strangely coached.
I thought the best part of this game, and no one's going to talk about it because everyone's going to talk about Sirianni and the decisions, and they're going to talk about Saquon Barkley and his incredible game. But I thought Vic Fangio came back to life here, because the Eagles defense shut down what was the best offense in the NFL through 2 weeks. And, you know, Rashid Shaheed, who's a guy who's been burning everybody deep in these games, was non-existent. Derek Carr wasn't able to find those deep shots. And, you know, as bad as the Eagles defense has looked early on this season, this was a great game for them.
Is Minnesota for real? I know right now they're probably, you got 3 wins banked against a pretty tough part of your schedule, so probably a playoff team, but can you put them on the same level as Detroit or San Francisco or not yet? What are your thoughts here on Minnesota?
Can Brian Flores win Coach of the Year? Because
they have assistant coach of the year, and they have a betting market. FanDuel has assistant coach of the year, so he can definitely win that. I know our buddy, the Bear, Chris Felica, has him at like 40-1. I missed the boat on that one, but that's
okay. Live. Well, if there is a market for assistant coach of the year, then yes, Brian Flores wins. But I think he should be just overall AP coach of the year, because he is having the best season out of anybody. The schemes that he is drawing up, as Brock Purdy told him after the game last week, are just absolutely sick. This was my best handicap of the week on the Minnesota Vikings. If they were able to shut down 2 years in a row, Brian Flores was able to shut down the 49ers offense led by Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan. Well, Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator from the Houston Texans, came from San Francisco. It is the same offense that Kyle Shanahan runs. And so if he was able to confuse Brock Purdy and be able to defeat the Kyle Shanahan offense, he was certainly going to be able to confuse a second-year quarterback in C.J. Stroud and defeat the same exact offense. And that's exactly what happened with the Vikings against the Texans here in this one. I do think Minnesota is for real, because their defense will keep them in games. And as long as Sam Darnold does not make the key mistake, they're going to be competitive in every game they play. I saw some people, I think, you know, Action Network might have said Darnold 50, 40-1, whatever, MVP. I'm not ready to crown Sam Darnold as the MVP, but I will say that the Vikings are better than we thought they were. They look like a legit team. And in that division, I honestly, it's going to be a competitive division all the way through, but I think the Vikings are a playoff team, 3-0 now. And you have to look at the history of 3-0 teams since the expansion of the playoffs in 2020. There's been 16 teams to go 3-0. 14 of them have made the playoffs. Only two teams that didn't were when the Panthers started. Remember, and coincidentally, that was Sam Darnold at quarterback. Remember when the Panthers started that season?
And they won two games the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, Darnold was not there anymore, was he, right? And so it was a situation where what they traded McCaffrey, it was a whole that whole mess. And then I believe it was that same year, it was another bad team that started 3-0, Denver. Denver started 3-0 and didn't make the playoffs that year. That was 2021. So I think Minnesota's a playoff team. I think they're for real, Will.
Did Darnold get benched in that year? I'm trying to think of what happened where they fell off the map. Because McCaffrey got traded the year after, and then Baker, I think, came in the year after. I'll have to look it up, but they fell apart regardless. Look, I'm still not at the point where, hey, this team is playing NFC title game on that championship Sunday, but I'm at least at the point where, like, I guess I wouldn't be shocked if they are, where I have to, like, reconsider it. Again, I put Detroit and San Francisco above the rest of the NFC, but look, Detroit lost a game to Tampa. They haven't looked unbelievable on offense. San Francisco absolutely gave a game away to them today, to the Rams. Vikings buried the 49ers last week, buried them last year. Granted, 49ers are missing guys, so, you know, maybe they're on that next level, but they're going to be at least, you know, they're making me reconsider at least.
Yeah, so it was Darnold for most of the first half of the season, and then that was the year that they, you know, went to P.J. Walker and all that fun stuff, and I think maybe Cam Newton at the end of the year.
Was it, like, fun?
Came back.
Was it fun stuff?
Well, it's fun to reminisce, but yeah, not a good year. There's a couple other things that, you know, I was paying attention to when I was watching this slate here on Sunday, and yeah, like, you keep an eye on the teams that are getting off to the 3-0 or the 0-3 starts. And, you know, you start to think, okay, well, yes, we have the Vikings are for real. Like, are the Pittsburgh Steelers for real, Will? Like, the Steelers win ugly game after ugly game after ugly game, but they win.
Yeah.
And now they're 3-0, and I can't ignore, because before the season, if you would have asked me, are the Steelers a playoff team, I would say no. And then I would go under on their win total and say, this is the first year that Tomlin's not going to have a winning season. But 3-0, I just told you the stats of the 3-0 teams. I think the Steelers are going to the playoffs.
Yeah. No, I think, look, I was wrong about them. I do think they caught a little bit of a break with Wilson getting hurt, because Fields can kind of can shorten the game because they play such good defense. Fields can run, make enough plays. He gives you that dynamic where Wilson looked so bad in the playoffs, and they were going to, you know, do the thing where they give the veteran the first couple weeks or the first month. I think this worked out beautifully. I do think there's a shelf life with them. And look, if you're a Steeler fan, you're listening and say, hey, you've been wrong about them. We don't care what you think, but I do think there's a shelf life where, hey, this team, they win every year, but they haven't won a playoff game in a while. If you get in the playoffs against the Mahomes, the Josh Allens, Rodgers looks revitalized, which we'll get to. I don't know that this works against those teams, but look, there's a lot of bad teams in the NFL, a lot of mediocrity. You can win a lot of games with their style.
Well, for sure. TJ Watt is just off to, I mean, he's off to another incredible start. Hutchinson's off to an incredible start. It's the defensive player of the year is going to be a fun race this year.
Do you think Dallas would have won the game if they got that stop on 3rd and 6 where Lamar completes the ball? Baltimore was on the verge of another absolute collapse. Did you think Dallas was going to get the ball back and win?
Well, I mean, obviously, when you look at the history of the Ravens, that's all they do is blow these big leads, right? They blow double-digit lead after double-digit lead after double-digit lead. They just don't know how to play with a lead. So, I wouldn't have been surprised if they blew it. And Dallas is, I mean, what a terrible defense Dallas all season long, right? But Baltimore, they have to learn how to finish football games. And this was a good one for them to do today, for Lamar to come through with a good pass. But whether it's, you know, not burning enough clock or whatever they're doing that's allowing teams to come back into games, changing the schemes defensively, something's broken right now in Baltimore. And I guess if you're an opponent, you never feel like you're out of the game, no matter how much you're down against them.
Did you have a problem with Shanahan's decision? 4th and 7, plus 37, 2 minutes and change left. If you get a first down, the game's over. You could punt. You could kick the field goal. I had no problem kicking it. I thought it was risky. I probably, if you gave me a true serum, I probably would have gone for it, but I can't kill him for it. That's another guy. Hey, for a good coach, he does blow a hell of a lot of these leads, a lot of these late games. Not great in these scenarios. Did you have a problem with that decision?
No, because, I mean, he's made kicks like that before, especially in that stadium, right? The broadcast was talking about it, that it was in the Super Bowl where he made a kick from 55 out. So it's a league now where, and this is what baffles me about Sirianni, like passing up the points. It almost feels like these kicks are becoming, you can't say automatic.
Yeah,
but
a few misses today, but I know what you mean. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a much higher percentage than what we're used to seeing. And so, like, when these coaches forego these kicks, I just don't know. I don't know if it's the right decision anymore. I get it, the analytics. I get it being aggressive, but points are points. And the goal of the game is to score more points than the other team. And so I agree, kick the field goal there. And I think more times than not, these coaches have to choose to kick these field goals.
Yeah, a field goal ends the game. Now it is like it's 54-55. I didn't hear that. I was flipping back and forth. I didn't hear that about kicking in that building. That was, the game was in LA and the Super Bowl last year was in Vegas. Maybe they meant he kicked there in college. I'm not sure. But look.
Yeah, maybe it was that. Oh, that national championship game, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. You're kicking. Yeah. You're kicking in LA. There's no conditions there. It still is 55, and it's the same thing with Philly, New Orleans, where if you miss it, boy, you're setting up good field position. I can't kill him for it, but that is an awful loss. They're up 14 basically the whole game, about to put the game away, and just to give that one away, that is an absolute brutal loss for the 49ers. Any other takeaways from today where this team is either better or worse than you thought, or you're changing your opinion on how you feel about them?
I'm really disappointed in the Cardinals. I thought that they would win the game against the Lions, at the very least, put up a fight. The way that I evaluated them, I absolutely upgraded them, because watching the Buffalo Bills do what they've done, you know, what they continue to do, I had to upgrade the Cardinals based on their Week 1 performance against Buffalo, and then absolutely destroying the Rams. You know, yes, shorthanded Rams, but look at what the 49ers just did against the shorthanded Rams. And the Cardinals absolutely decimated them. So playing at home against Detroit, and it wasn't like this was a game that got out of hand. Like,
no,
they had multiple opportunities to win this game, and the offense just could not get it going. They couldn't get the run game going, which was very disappointing. James Conner, what do you have? 9 carries for 17 yards. That's absolutely embarrassing. I was very disappointed in the Arizona Cardinals. I still think they're going to be a team to back this year. I just was very disappointed in that performance.
Couldn't get in the back door either. They had so many chances where those two teams, you figure, hey, I feel like I've seen it a million times with Murray and those games where it's just, hey, last team with the ball, you're down 7. You just get that late, long drive, a bunch of scrambles, and you sneak in the back door and win by 3. I thought they were going to do it late, and they got absolutely hosed. I don't know if you saw this. It was the 2-minute warning of the first half.
Where that was the pick. Listen, that's the play of the game. That changed the whole game. Like, it really did. They and look, I know the argument from a Lions perspective is that maybe some of the offensive linemen heard the whistle and stopped playing, which allowed the defensive line to just completely bum rush Jared Goff to the point where he throws it up and it gets tipped up for grabs and it's an interception. So if they didn't blow the whistle there, would the offensive linemen been more engaged? Would they have gotten to Goff? I don't know. But you want to talk about a game-changing play. That was it right there. And yeah, it was the wrong call.
Yeah, and again, I really thought they were getting in the back door, but look, Detroit did what they needed to do. And even after all of that, Detroit had them 3rd and 12. Arizona had them 3rd and 12. Or, hey,
third and 12.
The ball back. And I know.
It's absolutely embarrassing. 3rd and 12. Look, this is the second time in, when was the Syracuse game? Was that Friday?
Friday night, yes.
Yeah. So it's the second time in 3 days that I have lost because of one play. Now, I'm not saying that I don't know if the Cardinals were going to score, right? Like, we don't know that, right? We don't know if the Cardinals are going to score, but at least they get an opportunity to get the ball back. And it was the same thing against Syracuse. It was a 4th and 8, right? And they couldn't stop the other team from getting a first down. And then they lose. They give up the game winning field goal. And this was 3rd and 12. You just let him catch the ball for 10 yards. Like, how do you go one-on-one coverage on Amon-Ra St. Brown and let him get open over the middle and then they convert a third and down for a third and 12, convert for the first down, and you don't get to see the ball again. It's just very disappointing. It comes down to one play, and you would think that you had the advantage there, but no. And again, there's no guarantee that they come, that they score anyway, but just crazy disappointed. By the way, Andy Dalton. Wow.
As bad as Young has played, he's had, 20 miserable games here in the NFL. Today might be the worst day of Bryce Young's career, because if Dalton went out and stunk and put up 3 points or 6 points or whatever, people say, you know what? It's all the system. They don't have any talent. They don't have an offensive line. The fact that Dalton did that first drive, 90 yards or whatever, 30-something points, that makes Young, as bad as he looked before this, makes Young look even worse.
Yeah, and well, his confidence was shot.
Yes.
I mean, we saw that. Like, he literally could not – he had no confidence whatsoever. And there were opportunities where he could have, you know, made plays. Guys were – like, all the film guys that you watch, yeah, right, were talking about how, oh, this player is open. Oh, there's separation at the line of scrimmage. And Bryce Young just wasn't getting the ball to his players. And – now you have a competent veteran in Andy Dalton who's getting the ball to the Adam Thielens of the world, and you see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Two Monday night games here, Jags and the Bills, and we have the Bengals and the Commanders. Bengals laying about 7, Bills laying about 5.5. What do you like, if anything, here?
So how could you ignore the dogs, right? With everything that we have seen throughout the start of this NFL season, how could you ignore like what we're seeing from these dogs? So my initial look right away would be to take the Jaguars and to take the Commanders. Now, I don't want to bet against the Bills. I don't want to bet against the Bills ever. I don't want to bet against them in Buffalo. And I certainly don't want to bet on Trevor Lawrence. So I'm going to throw that one out the door. And instead, I'm going to look at the Commanders. It's going to sound crazy, Will. I think that the Commanders plus north of a touchdown are going to cover here against the Bengals. I'm not saying they're going to win outright. And I'm not saying that everyone's going to get knocked out of Survivor. Maybe part of me wants them to, because I've been knocked out 2 weeks in a row. But
yeah, who's still left in Survivor? I don't know anybody still in Survivor.
I don't know. But I do think that with a running quarterback in Jaden Daniels, in fact, I'll give you a best bet, Jaden Daniels over his rushing yard prop, okay? I think that they're going to be able to keep the game close. And if they're down 2 scores, I think the back door is open, because the Bengals are going to play drop coverage and allow underneath routes, and not just that, room for Jaden Daniels to take off and run. Last week, they made a conscious effort to not run with Jaden Daniels. This week, I think they let him loose. I think the Commanders keep this thing close with the Cincinnati Bengals.
You're a Jets fan, right? I always get confused with New York teams. I thought that was a great night for them. You know, people could poo-poo. Hey, it's the Patriots. It's at home. That Patriot team was very close to being 2-0. They dominated. The quarterback looked great. The defense looked great. You needed that kind of night to feel good about yourself. The schedule here, they don't play on the road for a month. The schedule's manageable. I like everything about the Jets. And plus, if you look at Miami, you're probably going to be playing them with Skylar Thompson. I don't know why Tua would come back. By the time he is ready to come back, they're probably going to be 1-6. So to me, this Jets team is primed to win their 10, 11-plus games. Where are you at here with the Jets?
So in the beginning of the season, you know, I gave out a couple of bets. I placed one of them, and it's going to be a loss. But I said Jets – I gave out Jets last undefeated team.
I like that one too, yeah.
And then the one that I did place was the Jets to have the best record after 5 weeks. And the reason why I like that was because if they got by San Francisco, and this is in the summer I'm talking about, I thought they were going to be facing Will Levis, Drake May, Bo Nix, and J.J. McCarthy. Like, that was my look ahead on the Jets. Now, it turns out they face Jacoby Brissett. They still get the victory. It's fine. Will Levis is who they thought they were. Now they're going to face Bo Nix, and he's, you know, got themselves a victory. Great. And Sean Payton's incredible in weeks 3 and 4 as a head coach ATS. And then they have to do the London game against former Jet quarterback Sam Darnold and the incredible Minnesota Vikings. So I don't feel as confident about that game as I once did, but I think when you look at the game against the Denver coming up, I hate the term must win when you know you're not eliminated from postseason contention, but you can't afford to lose this game to the Denver Broncos because it is a travel situation to London, and you do have to, you know, the uncertainty of going up against the Brian Flores defense and the wild card factor that is Sam Darnold. And then you have to come back and play a primetime game against Buffalo and then a tough defense in the Steelers. It's a tough 3-week stretch for the Jets. So they need to pick up a win against Denver. In fact, I'll give you an early best bet. I'll go Jets over Denver, and I'll get you the line right now. Let's see. Look ahead line on that game is Jets. Oh, Jets minus -8. Yeah, Jets will win that game by double digits. I'm going to fade the Broncos off the high of the first win. Give me the Jets in a game that they absolutely have to have.
Will the Mets make the playoffs?
No.
Wow, you think Atlanta catches? Now, but to be fair, by the time while we're recording this, they're playing the Phillies. It's 1-1. This is a massive game for them because they go into this series against Atlanta, either 2-up or 1-up on Atlanta. I'm pretty sure I got that right.
So the Braves won today. So the Braves won. So if the Mets lose, oh, that's right. They'll still be 2-up because they'll both be winning. So if they lose, they'll be one game up. If the Braves take 2 of 3 from them, now here's the important thing that you have to pay attention to, Will. There is no more game 163. In Major League Baseball, because of the expanded playoffs, there's tie-breaking scenarios. So there is no extra game being played. All the Braves need to do, now the Braves and Mets are tied in the season series, which means the winner of this series, this 3-game set, will have the tiebreaker. So all the Braves need to do is finish tied with the Mets at the end of the season if they take 2 of 3, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Because they'll have the tiebreaker by winning the season series. It's not like Detroit's in a negative situation where they're now ahead of the Twins by a half a game, and Minnesota's going to lose now, so they'd actually be ahead by a full game. But if Detroit were tied with the Twins for the third wild card, they lose the tiebreaker, so they wouldn't make the playoffs. So the Braves are actually in a better situation. They don't have to overtake the Mets. They just have to be tied with the Mets as long as they win this series coming up. Same thing for the Mets. If the Mets win the series against the Braves and they go in at least up one game, then the Braves aren't going to come back and tie them. But even if they do, it doesn't matter because the Mets will have the tiebreaker. So I think that's important for people to realize when it comes to this Mets-Braves series is that is going to determine the tiebreakers.
Feel good about the Yankees. Feels like they've stabilized a little bit, got some pitching back. Looks like they're going to be the one seed. They are going to win the division. A little bit of a letdown. I kind of wanted to see them versus Baltimore for the division, but hey, as Yankee fans, we'll take them winning the East here. They will be in the ALDS here in a couple of weeks. How are you feeling here about the Yanks?
I feel great about the Yanks. I think the one issue that, you know, I think we were all Yankee fans concerned about was the back end of their bullpen, and they seem to have figured this thing out. So I do think that it's a great spot for the Yankees now going into October, and I'm certainly not going to bet against them in the postseason.
Got to get to a World Series. If you get to a World Series and you lost to the Phillies or the Dodgers in 6 or 7, you know what? It would hurt, but you live with it. It's been 15 years since they've been there. Got to get there.
Oh, I agree. 100%.
Got to get there. And I actually, you know what? Yankees versus the field, I would pick the field. But if I had to actually pick a team out of the AL, I know they're flawed. I would actually pick them. I think Judge and Soto, Judge is due for a monster postseason one of these years. We've seen these guys like Bonds and A-Rod struggle in the playoffs and have monster playoffs eventually. I think Cole, they got enough pitching back. I think the rest of the American League is weak. I actually would pick them to advance the World Series right now.
Yeah, so would I. I just don't see anybody really lining up against them. Cleveland's dangerous because of their bullpen, the back end of their bullpen, but the Yankees offense is just, they're going to be in every game, especially at home. I think this is the year.
How about Kansas City trying to miss the playoffs? They have now lost. Was it 7 in a row, 8 in a row? I think 7 in a row here.
Seven in a row. It's the most baffling thing I've ever seen. If you go back through their schedule, right? Remember, they also had a 7-game losing streak, you know, what, like a month, like not like a couple of weeks ago when they took the first 3 of an important series against the Guardians, where if they would have won all 4, they would have been tied for first place. So they take the first three of the series. They lose the final game of that series. Then they get swept in four games by Houston, and then they lose two of three to Cleveland. That was seven straight losses that knocked them out of the division race. Then they win a couple, and you think, okay, they're going to get a wild card anyway, but now another seven-game losing streak while Detroit, since August 11th, is the best team in Major League Baseball, the best record in Major League Baseball. This is going to be like, this might be worse than the Mets blowing a seven-game lead with 17 left.
Would be bad. And look, that Detroit, like you said, Detroit gets Chicago to end it. Atlanta, Kansas City is the final weekend on that end. So that could be a knockout for somebody. That's a fascinating. I wish, and I mentioned this before, I wish they didn't end their season on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. With all the football going on, it kind of gets lost. I wish it was kind of just a kind of Wednesday night so we could all enjoy the drama of the final season. But that's baseball. That's how they do things.
I know, especially like, and it's a cool thing that they do like on Sunday where everybody, there is no Sunday night baseball. So like everybody plays at the same time. And it's fun because like it's almost like an NFL Sunday where it's like you can do it like Red Zone where every game is being played at the same time on Sunday, the final day of the baseball regular season. And I love it because there is, like I said, there is no game 162. So everything's on the line on that final day. But who's watching baseball on an NFL Sunday? Come on.
Yeah, and there was that year, it's 2011, where remember all those crazy endings, and it was on like a Tuesday, Wednesday night where like the Rays had a comeback against the Yankees, the Red Sox gagged, it was that great like one game 162 night, and it was during the weekday, we could all enjoy it, but now on Sunday, like you said, it just gets completely buried.
Was that the Evan Longoria yep. home run that barely made it over the wall?
Good memory. Yeah. I think that tie it and then somebody else won it. I can't remember. That was a Tuesday night and there were three or four unbelievable endings. Remember
yep.
the Cardinals came out of nowhere to make the playoffs and then won the World Series. Boston had a massive gag to blow, not just like the division, but a wild card spot. I remember this was Carl Crawford trying to throw somebody out at the plate and the ball like died at third base and he was in shallow left field. That was great. And that, yeah, those are the great nights you get, but against football, it's just not as easy.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Scott, you're the best man. Anything I miss? Anything else you're thinking here?
Yeah, Malik Nabers, offensive rookie of the year.
He is so good.
He right now he is second, or he's tied with Marvin Harrison Jr. at +220. You lost all the value on it because obviously it was a long time when Caleb Williams was a massive favorite, and then you could bet Malik Nabers at a great plus money price. The fact that you're still going to get +220, I would still make that bet.
He is a monster player, and that was a good win for the Giants. Hey, Scott, you're the best man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter, X, at Scott's On Air, ScottsOnAir. Monday through Friday, straight out of Vegas AM is the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. And catch me live on Saturday nights on VSiN, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific. We do a full preview of all the Sunday NFL games.
I might not have the brightest audience, but I think they could even spell Scott's On Air. I don't know that you need to spell Scott's On Air. Scott, you're the best, man. I appreciate
it. Fun to say. Later, Will.
All right, that'll do it. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Scott Seidenberg. We will be back Wednesday. Talk some more NFL baseball as the playoffs get closer and closer. So rate, review, and subscribe if you could. Talk to you Wednesday.